special meeting. Welcome everyone to the special meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for October 27, 2021. I would like to now call the meeting to order. That's item one, and we go to item two, Pledge of Allegiance. And I would like to ask Director Atkins, if he's in attendance, if he wouldn't mind reciting the pledge for us, and the rest of us can remain seated and mute yourself. Director Atkins, please.
Yes. Please place your right hand over your heart, doff your hat, and join me in reciting this wonderful pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Atkins. Even though we have a brief agenda tonight, we still have to go through the announcements that we normally do. So here we go. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of AB 361 and SCV Water Resolution SCV 235. Board and staff, please mute all of your devices until you're ready to speak to avoid feedback, echoing, and background noise. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. All board members, please turn on your cameras during the meeting. Staff, please turn on your cameras when speaking and turn them off when you are done speaking. Board members will be advised to use the raise hand feature in Zoom. When action and discussion items are presented, I will call on each of you when it is your turn to speak. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item three. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in the agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. Please do not turn on your camera unless you are speaking during public comment, and then please turn them off when you have completed your comments. To participate in public comment by phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called upon by the last two digits of the phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. When you are finished with your public comment, staff will re-mute you. Please be familiar with the last two digits of your phone number. Procedures for tonight's meeting. I will introduce each agenda item staff will present. I will ask the public for comments. There will be no action taken tonight, so we don't need to go any further. I will take that back. We do have one action item, approval of the agenda, so I will ask for public comments, then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After further discussion, board secretary will call the roll call votes. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting are posted on the SCV Water website. The board secretary will be doing attendance by roll call, and each action item being considered will be taken by roll call vote. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll for attendance?
As I call your name, please say present. Director Ford.
Present.
Director Armitage.
Present.
Director Kelly.
Present.
Director Colley.
I'm here.
Director Cooper.
Present.
Director Atkins.
Present.
Director Ozahofsky. Sorry, Director Ozahofsky.
I'm here.
Thank you.
April.
Director Planbeck.
I'm here.
Director Bronstein.
Present.
Vice President Gladbach.
Here.
Vice President Mortensen.
Present.
President Martin.
I am here.
Thank you.
We now can go on to item three, public comments. Madam Secretary, are there any members of the public who wish to comment at this time on items not on the agenda?
There is. Just one moment where I share my screen. We do have a public comment. It's from call-in user number two. I'm not quite sure who that is. But please go ahead and hit *6 and begin your public comment.
Cam Noltemeyer. I just have a few items I wanted to bring up quickly. Hopefully we are going to be meeting in-house, so to speak, at that time, I think what is necessary is that since we have so many new members, that there will be a ethics training. Now, this ethics training is particularly for being in a public position, and I don't hear of it being used when it really is required, from my understanding. And the other thing is, when we do go back to regular meetings, I think it's improper for the board to sit down and have a full-blown meal served to them in another room before you go into a meeting. That seems entirely improper, and I'm willing to challenge that. And just no dinners before you have your board meetings. It will speed things up, and it will be more proper, and the people won't wonder what you're talking about in the back room before you come out. I will be following those two issues, and that's all I have for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Ms. Dunn, go ahead and hit star 6, and you may begin your public comment.
Good evening. I have a I'm still upset about having the time before the when the agenda is announced that the public has to have their response then. And I heard the last two answers, same thing, from the general manager. And I think after the last meeting and what happened, because agenda 6.3 had to do with the contract for the low bidder and how you were handling that. And then when it came to, and of course nobody could speak after that, and so when the agenda 8 item came up, one lady from the public said this is how they handled that sort of thing. And see, that was a suggestion, and you would have gotten that suggestion after that first agenda item, 6.3. So that's where my complaint is, that you may have questions also from the public, and I understand that could happen, but you're going to have to learn how to handle those so that you don't go into having maybe a Brown Act violation. But the out-of-the-box thinking by others, you are missing those suggestions. And I definitely feel, as Cam Noltemeyer just said, I used to think the same thing. How do we know when you are in another room having dinner, that you aren't talking business? And so I have an agreement with her on that issue also. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn, for your public comment. Is there any further public comment? There is not. Back to you, President Martin.
Yes, I'd like to respond a little bit to Ms. Noltemeyer. We do have ethics training every year, whether we're meeting virtually or in person, doesn't matter. We do it every year. Is that correct, Madam Secretary?
Every other year, and it actually every is coming up. Yeah, and there will be ethics training for the full board at the end of January of this coming year.
Okay, and that's what's required by the government code, right?
Yes, it is.
Very good. Thank you. We can move on now to item 4, approval of the agenda. We only have 6 items on the agenda tonight. I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved, Mortensen.
Motion second. By Atkins. We have a motion and a second. Do we have any public comments on the agenda?
We do not. President Martin, would you like me to call roll?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Thank you. As I call your name, please cast your vote. Director Armitage?
Yes.
Director Cooper?
Yes.
Director Ozuchowski?
Yes.
Director Bronstein? I will come back to Director Bronstein. Director Atkins?
Yes.
Director Plambeck?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yeah.
Director Cauley?
Yes.
Director Ford?
Yes.
One more time. Director Bronstein?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach?
Yes.
And President Martin?
Yes.
Thank you. The agenda is approved.
Very good. Thank you. We move on to item three, discussion on redistricting procedures and process. Tonight, we have Assistant General Manager Steve Cole, who will introduce our speaker. Mr. Cole, please take it away.
Great. Good evening, President Martin. Thank you, members of the board. I was going to do just a brief introduction of what can be expected tonight from the presentation. We're going to run through just briefly the team that we've put together to help us through this exercise. We've got a presentation for the board and the public tonight that will walk through the legal requirements of, why are we meeting tonight to discuss redistricting. So we'll get the lowdown on the requirements. We'll have a presentation from the consultants on also on kind of the history of our electoral divisions in the Valley for the water agency specifically. We'll also, I think the consultants are ready to give us a little peek under the tent for the new census data. So we'll take a look at that. We'll talk about the path forward of what process needs to happen to get us over the finish line. And then we'll obviously get into a discussion and input on the subject matter. So a little bit about our team on this. We have a few different consultants, and then Joe Byrne and Tom Bunn are both providing legal support for this effort. We have engaged Joan Isaacson and her team at Kearns and West to help us with any public engagement needs. And our main consultant is Doug Johnson. And Doug Johnson, you may be familiar, helped us through the original setup of our original districts or divisions, we'll call it electoral divisions for the water agency. Is very familiar with the demographics of our community. Doug is a pretty renowned demographics expert. He's worked for nationally. He's worked a lot in our state for counties, cities, school districts, special districts. You kind of name it. He's done it in this field for demographics. Doug's highly qualified. He holds a doctorate's degree in political science from Claremont University. He also went to UCLA for an MBA, so kind of a local school product here in our universities. He's published several articles on the subject matter, and we're really, really happy to have him on our team. He's a renowned expert for us to hear from and learn from. So with that, tonight, Doug and Joe have kind of put together a presentation. I think we're going to start off with Joe walking us through kind of the legal requirements of redistricting, and then Doug will hop in and start getting into a little bit more of the specifics of the demographics and the recent data that we've received. So Joe, if you're ready, I want you to go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Steve, and good evening, everybody. I'm kind of the warm-up for the main act. Which is Doug. April, can you go to the next slide? Okay, I think a question came up at the last meeting, essentially, why are we here and what are we doing? I think everyone is probably familiar, but I did want to be clear that we're required by our act every 10 years to evaluate based upon the census data, whether the lines need to be redrawn or not. It's something that cities, counties, all special districts have to do. So it's not, we're not in this alone. It's something that we're required to do. And everyone around the state is in the process of doing this right now. In fact, Doug is fantastically busy. Okay, next slide, everyone. The basic process requirements that are in election code kind of 2200 for us are that we have to have two public hearings. At the end of the presentation, we'll talk about kind of a proposed schedule to make sure that we have adequate time to contemplate, consider, and go through whatever path we might choose to follow. And recently enacted in legislation, the deadline for us is April 17, 2022. So that's coming fairly soon. And again, at the end here, we'll map out kind of what the processes are. Next slide. Okay, here's kind of some basic state law considerations, which are, again, in Elections Code 2200. And that is, this is just may consider. It's not an exhaustive list, but they've kind of identified some things that are potentially relevant and adequate for the boards to consider. It's topography, geography, cohesiveness, contiguity, integrity, and impactness of territory and communities of interest of the division. So kind of neighborhoodness and things like that are things that you are allowed to think of. Next slide. Now kind of bringing that into the overall larger picture, we've got federal laws which apply, which is the basic concept, I think, which we're all familiar with, that districts must have more or less equal population. There's a slight variance that's allowed there. Have to be compliant with the Voting Rights Act. May not be any racial discrimination. And there's also prohibited from any kind of racial gerrymandering. Now, on the traditional redistricting principles here, it kind of ties in, the state laws that we talked about before, communities of interest, compact, contiguous, visible. And then it works in some other principles which have been established, which Doug can dive into in more detail over the course of court cases in the past. Respects voters' choice, plan future growth, minimize voters shifted to different election years, preserving the core of existing election areas, all things which are potentially or things that are kind of traditional principles to think about when you're doing redistricting. Next slide. And again, Doug's going to get, to the extent we have questions on those as well, Doug is in a position to dive into a lot more detail. We also thought, for the benefit of some of the board members who were not around when the merger occurred, to just go through the history. As Steve said, Doug was the consultant to help us draw the original three divisions for SCV Water back in 2017, which were codified in SB 634. Previous to our current setup, when we were two districts, New Hall County Water District had five directors, which were all elected at large, which means that there were no divisions. There's been a big push, and the California Voting Rights Act has precipitated that, to move districts towards by-division elections. In case you're following the news, the city is one of the holdouts for at-large districts, and they're getting a lot of attention for that. So anyway, that was five directors at large. Castaic Lake Water District was 11 total board members with two appointed directors, one for District 36, another for New Hall County Water District, and then nine elected. And of the nine that were elected, there were three that were at large and two for each of the three divisions. So when we did SB 634, next slide, we actually drafted into the legislation. So if you look at our act, it has the specific description of the boundaries of each of the original three electoral divisions. They were confirmed and essentially ratified by LAFCO as part of the LAFCO process after our merger. The board was originally 15 board members. I think all of you are more or less aware of this. And the act calls for its reduction to nine by January 1, 2023. After January 1, 2023, there'll be three elected directors for each of the three divisions. And the appointed position is eliminated as of January 1, 2023. And that is, again, in our act. At present, we have, I think, as all of you know, 11 elected directors and one appointed director. Next slide. Okay, at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Doug. And he's got a slide here of the existing divisions, which were drawn up again when we merged. And then we'll go through the rest of this presentation and have a lot of opportunity for comment and input.
Thank you, Joe. And It's good to be with the Santa Clara Valley Water Agency again. So thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to work with Joe and Steve and with everyone at the agency. So do appreciate that. And I do have fond memories of the last project. It was such a creative and challenging puzzle we had to put together. So enjoyed the opportunity to work with many of you on the board and with everyone at the district on sorting through this transition. And so I welcome the chance to be back working with you now as we kind of get to the end of the transition phase and settle into the long haul of governing the district here. As was just mentioned, we did end up with a three election division system where when we get to the end of this, there will be three directors from each division. And they roughly break out, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into this. The population is a big challenge. The geography of the Santa Clarita region is a big challenge. It's not a nice grid of streets that make drawing nice, pretty districts really easy. You know, you have lots of valleys and curving roads. So all of these factors played into arriving at the map you see today. We have three on the east, on the west side, and then two in the northeast, and then one really reaching kind of from Newhall to Canyon Country, and then over to I-5 and over to the eastern border of the agency. So go on to the next slide, please. So given how much growth is happening in Santa Clarita, the results of the census data were quite surprising. Usually when we have a lot of growth, we have one area that grows particularly fast and others that grow, but not nearly as quickly. And when we ran the numbers, what you can see in that top table is that the growth occurred more or less even in all three of the divisions. So the numbers you see there, the 95,698, 94,541, and 95,730 are the adjusted census data. The state has adjusted the data so that prisoners in state prisons are actually counted at their home address and then passed a statute saying this is the data we should use for this purpose. When we add those numbers up, we get the 285, almost 286,000 number on the far right. And so my job is to then take that and divide it by three to figure out the ideal population. If we perfectly balanced each of the divisions, what would that number be? And then to calculate how much each division is over or under. So you can see in the second row, the deviation from the ideal, division one is over by just under 400, division two is short by about 800, and division three is over by 400. And below that, the percentages given there are that percentage deviation. So division one is 0.39% short of the ideal. Division two is short by 0.82%. Division three is over by 0.43. Now, this is where the law steps in and defines it. And what the law says is you take the distance or the difference between your largest and smallest. So your largest division is 0.43. Your smallest is negative 0.82. The difference between those two is that 1.25 number on the right. And so what the law would say is this, your current map has an overall plan deviation of 1.25%. The law is, as long as that number is less than 10%, you're presumptively constitutional. You can still get in trouble for certain issues, but really, as long as that number is less than 10%, your map is at least borderline legal. And at 1.25%, that's essentially dead match. So you are population balanced for all intents and purposes. There is a note at the bottom that the boundary file I was using for this analysis did not include the most recent annexation, the 500 homes, I believe, down in Valencia. But to their credit, you have staff that move lightning fast, and they did get me the new border boundary definition between when I put this slide together and today. And I just before this meeting started ran those numbers. Those houses, through some quirks of the census data and how blocks along the border are counted where we have split blocks, they're not going to have a significant impact on the difference. It comes out to, instead of there being a 1.25 plan deviation, it becomes 2.01. So still well below 10%. So legally, you're well within population balance and not required to redraw for that reason. The next box on this screen is the second federal requirement, which is the Federal Voting Rights Act. And we have to be sure that if there's a possibility of drawing a majority Latino or majority any protected class election division, that we seriously look at that and see if it's a reasonable proposal. The current numbers for your election divisions, though, are 31. You can see Division 1 is 31% of citizen voting age population are Latino, 5% African-American or Black, and 11% Asian and Pacific Islander. And that's the most Latino division. The others are 20, as you can see, are 26 and 23%. And the highest Asian American is 14% in Division 3. So there's no division that we would say is in potential risk of being a violation of the Voting Rights Act because you're blocking a protected class from having a majority of a election division. So good news on both federal benchmarks that we have to look at. And you're fine on both those fronts, which means you're not required to redraw your lines by federal law. We can go on to the next slide. This slide is just showing you visually what I was just talking about the Latino concentrations. One of the tricks of these maps is that they show the percentage by colors. So purple is less than 25% of the Latino citizen voting age population. Blues are 25 to 50%. And then the greens, yellows, and reds are where Latinos are a majority of the eligible voters or citizen voting age population. One of the tricks of these maps, though, when they merge kind of densely populated and very rural or light, sparsely populated areas, is the ones that catch your eye are the big, like in the southwest corner, the two census blocks that are red out there. They're red, they're 75% or above, but I think there's probably two people in each of those. Where the numbers come in and where you get numbers that start impacting the voting patterns is when you're in the more densely populated, heavily populated areas. And that's why I indicate here, the two key areas for voting rights compliance are up by Canyon Country, up by Soledad Road, where we see very, very small individual blocks that are a bunch of yellows and reds, with lots of people in them. And then down along Railroad Avenue, in the Newhall area, where we similarly have heavily populated city blocks or heavily Latino. If those two were in separate areas, we might have to look at putting them together to see if that might get us an effective Latino election area. But as is noted, when we went through this process before, those areas were already put together. And so we don't see that as a voting rights violation. You do, of course, have pockets of Latinos everywhere. And of course, you have Latinos living everywhere in your jurisdiction. But those are just where there's a particularly concentrated Latino population. So that's where we pay particular attention to, and you should be good. You should be fine on both those fronts. So, and as noted at the bottom, I did also look at this map for Asian Americans and for African Americans, and there's no similar concentrations that would influence the overall population of a 95,000 person election division. So the next slide. So you have a couple of choices here. As I noted, you actually don't have to redraw your lines. You could just choose to adopt a resolution saying we're keeping the current map as it is because it is population balanced and complies with all the legal requirements. You do, however, have the option to redraw the lines if you wish to go through that process to make adjustments for whatever reasons you choose that are in those legally acceptable choices listed before. If you do want to go through that process, we come back with another hearing in January. Get input, direction, and you can give us some ideas today if you want to go that way, what you'd like to see in the form of draft maps. So we can come back with some very general ones in January. Obviously, February we would return with very detailed draft maps, hopefully incorporating detailed feedback from you. prior to a third hearing in March and possibly adoption in March and certainly adoption before the deadline of April 17th. The next slide. So the key discussion today is number one, do you want to go for option one and just keep your current lines? In which case, we just come back with a resolution formalizing that direction. Or would you like to consider going through the process and redraw the line, consider redrawing the lines for community of interest or any other concerns you might have about the current map? And if so, then we come back with those draft maps and have a give and take over a meeting or two prior to adopting a new map. I believe that's the last slide. Is there one more?
That's it.
Okay.
And maybe that's
go ahead, Joe.
I was just going to add one last thing. So in getting the census data and Doug preparing that, it was a bit of a surprise. I think all of us had anticipated that the populations were going to be growing in certain areas as opposed to others, and that the option of essentially keeping the lines the same was not necessarily going to be one. So that I just wanted to communicate that. So that's a good option, obviously. But as Doug indicated, we certainly can look at redrawing as well. But that was a kind of a pleasant surprise. Thank you, President Martin.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Byrne. Before I open up the questions and discussion, I need to ask, are there any public comments, April? Is there any member of the public who would like to comment on the presentation?
There is. Just one moment.
Thank you.
Ms. Dunn, please go ahead and hit star six and you may begin your public comment.
Yes, I wanted to caution all the new directors to carefully watch any new boundaries of their division. They may be put in a different division. In the past, one director was changing his residence and managed to have the new boundary include his new residence. Gary Gladbeck, can you tell the board what year it was? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Is there any further public comment? There is not. Back to you, President Martin.
Very good. Before we open up to board discussion, I need to ask Mr. Byrne a question. Mr. Johnson suggested that the board could indicate a preference on option one, option two, but as far as I understand, this is an informational presentation tonight. Are we then also allowed to provide a preference on which way we go after this meeting, or do we need to do that at a separate meeting?
So this is informational tonight, but certainly the purpose of it is to gather input from the board to further inform us how we proceed. But we would still need to follow the procedures and have the appropriate public hearings, even if we're adopting the same lines.
Very good. With that, we'll open it up to board questions and discussion. And I see Director Cooper has his hand up. Go ahead, Director Cooper.
I just took it down because Mr. Byrne just answered my question. You're muted, Gary.
Vice President Martinson, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, President Martin. This was a question I was hoping maybe Mr. Johnson could answer quickly. Can you explain to me the cost difference between the keep current division map and go through a process to adopt a new map? What is it going to cost to go through that process? Round numbers, ideally with both consultant and staff time.
Sure. So I don't have the exact figures in front of me, but there definitely is a structure price where if all we're really doing is the analysis we've done of your current divisions, generally, it's about a third of the price of if we have to go through the whole process of drawing maps and coming back to multiple meetings. And we do charge by the hearing attended as well. So as Mr. Byrne noted, you would still have to hold the hearings and go through the process, but you likely wouldn't need me or someone from my company at those hearings. So it's about one third the price, I don't know the exact amounts.
Thank you.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation to both Mr. Byrne and Mr. Johnson. And Mr. Johnson, I want to let you know that I watched the webinar that you're on the CSDA or the California Special District Association's website to do my homework and get some basic information before tonight's meeting. And it was very informative. So thank you for that. So my question is, those additional 500 homes that are being annexed in, are those District 2? And if so, does that, I'm assuming that changes, well, I guess let me ask that first. Is that District 2 or which district would that, would those fall under? Or Division 2, I suppose.
I believe.
I can answer that, Doug, if you want me to. They're within District, Division 3.
Oh, interesting. Okay. For some reason, I thought it was two. And I was thinking it would bring up that negative 700 and something number that we saw on the chart. So, okay. I guess I'll look at those numbers again to see if the difference is, you know, I'm just thinking when people are running or when people are candidates, differences in those numbers equal cost to candidates. So I want to look at those kind of with the eye of, is it fair to everybody who is a candidate as well? So I'll look at those some more. So thank you.
Yes, certainly. And it's a good point. The only addition I make is keep in mind that in a division of 95,000 or so, you know, a couple hundred is really a rounding error. Especially with this year's census, as everyone knows, it had particular challenges.
Okay, thank you.
Director Planbeck.
My question was, I noticed on one of the charts in the PowerPoint that you were supposed to consider possible future growth. And I was thinking that if we had an ability to adjust down Division 3 into Division 2, it might be a good idea to do that just because the amount of growth that's probably going to occur in the next 10 years in Division 3 is going to make it pretty unbalanced, I would think. I mean, there's some big projects in 2 also, but so maybe not so much, I don't know, but I don't know if you looked at future growth at all or if that's too iffy. That's all I had to say. Otherwise, I'm fine with leaving them the way they are. But if we could have 500 go into 2, that might be a good idea.
Yeah, just to answer a question, I did not look at the future growth patterns at this point. Especially one of, as Joe mentioned, this was a bit of a surprise. You know, if we had done future growth analysis back when the divisions were first adopted, we would not have expected them to grow essentially the same amount. Mm-hmm. So I might be a little leery of projections at this point as well. Mm-hmm. But
well, but if there's just a little sliver to shave off to put into 2 out of 3, it looks like there's some sliver places. I don't know if any directors live in any of those. But that would be my suggestion.
Director Colley.
Sorry, okay. It takes me a second to unmute. So I really wanted to sort of, I guess, ask a question first, and then I'll have some comments, but I want to reserve my comments, I think. My question is, in the past, so last time CLWA went through this process, we used an ad hoc committee and it came up with something then that the board eventually approved. We went through a similar process when we combined the agencies to create the current. And that was all done, the bulk of the work was done by committees. It sounds like now we're proposing that if we're going to change, that we're going to attempt to do the bulk of the work as a full board. And I just kind of want to get some comments on whether or not that approach is, it would be unique and unusual for this board to do that, since we do use committee structure for most everything else. So I just kind of want to see if somebody could comment on that, please.
Mr. Byrne, is this a topic we can discuss tonight?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why we can't discuss it. We're talking about the process.
Okay. Yeah, Director Colley, I knew you had an interest in knowing about the potential for an ad hoc committee, and I have given it some thought. And at this point, I'm not inclined to do an ad hoc committee, but I'll reserve that judgment until we get through with this presentation and are able to give it some more thought. Director Atkins.
Hey, after the presentation, by the way, thank you, Joe, and thank you, Doug, for good presentations. It's clear to me that we are in compliance. And there's no reason to change the lines, and I would move we proceed accordingly.
Yeah, it's just an information item tonight.
Okay.
Still would have to have the two public hearings, but that certainly can be an option that we consider at the public hearing.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Director Planbeck.
I just wanted to thank you, President Martin, for not putting it into ad hoc, because then it doesn't have to be publicly noticed. And I think redistricting has been so public in all the other legislative seats that if we went into ad hoc and then didn't have open meetings, I think we would really, the people in the Valley would be concerned. So I appreciate the choice you have made on this, and I hope we can continue this way. I don't see any reason not to.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. Before I make my comments, is there any other, Director Cooper? Go ahead, sir.
Doug and Joe, I really appreciate what you've done tonight. And I'm really happy to see that what we did 4 years ago really worked out well, because I think there was a lot of thought put in it back then. And it is interesting that each of those areas have kind of grown comparably. So as long as we're within the law now, and we're well within the law, there's no reason to go forward and make changes, just little minor changes and the cost that would be associated with that. So I really like what we put together here, and I'm certainly in support of it. And thank you for your presentation.
Right. Vice President Gladbeck and Director Armisen's, I'll get to you, but Vice President Gladbeck hasn't had a chance yet. So go ahead, Jerry.
Chair. Thank you, Gary. First of all, I want to thank Joe and Doug for your great presentation. I'm like you guys, I was totally shocked that the numbers came in the way they did. That just shows how great a job you did before. And I'm like some of the others that I see no reason to change boundaries. I mean, it's so close and we're well within the requirements. So I think we just leave hands off, leave it as it is.
Thank you, Vice President Gladbeck. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I want two things. First is I want to echo what Director Planbeck had commented on and also show or express my appreciation for keeping this in the public forum. I think it's important to keep it in front of public eyes and ears, and I would not support it going into an ad hoc committee. And then secondly, the question that Director Planbeck asked earlier about future growth, I guess I have one more question related to that. I feel like that the Newhall Ranch development is probably the largest development coming on board. Do we know approximately how many additional customers, or I guess it's going by homes, that are going to be added in the next 10 years from that project specifically?
Steve, do you have any input on that? I have no idea. But go ahead.
Yeah, I certainly can take a run at it. That development has a projection for sure about housing units that they're looking to put in accordance with the specific plan area that they have out there. It does, the challenge is so much of this is economy driven. So, you can have the best laid plans, but are those actually going to materialize or not based upon the economy? So, I think we would be open to whatever the board thought was a reasonable approach to that type of projections. But
so you don't know, we don't have an estimate of how many. I have a hard time sticking with the current maps if we don't know how many homes are going to be coming into that particular side of the valley, because I think it could potentially skew the numbers at that point.
Just to be clear, Director Armitage, there are estimates. So, but how real they turn out to be is the challenge, right? Because timing of development depends on the economy and the process that it goes through.
Just another thought too. I think it is, it's a good question. We really want to probably, and I was kind of thinking this previously when Director Planbeck asked the question, that perhaps the staff could kind of assess what information we have from our urban water management plan and see how site specific it gets over the 10-year period. Because you'd want to look at all three divisions. Mm-hmm. It's really the differential in growth that's going to be important over time. And we do know about the larger, developments that are planned, and we could, it will be an estimate though. The other wild card is changes in population driven by the changes in the single family zoning and the auxiliary dwelling unit regulations, mm-hmm. which are probably skewed towards some of the older areas with larger lots or three car garages and that kind of thing. So that will be, I don't know that we can pinpoint that, but I would say we could certainly use the time between now and when the board next meets to see what we could discern and then try to share that information if it's of value. We may conclude that it's pretty tough to tell, but I think it's worth giving it at least an initial shot and let you know kind of what we do have.
Thank you. I agree. I would like to see those numbers before deciding which way to go. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And I think we might want to look at whether we could, whether it's really easy to tell you would be well outside the 10% by the end of that period, or whether it's still, not going to shift it that much. Generally, I think in our overall long-term growth, the New Hall Ranch, the Five Point developments are probably around half or maybe a little less than half of the overall projected growth and infill. So that would suggest, it might be a little more than the other two divisions, but the question is over a 10-year period, how much more? Because those build-outs go out quite a bit further.
All right, Director Ozahosky.
Thank you, Mr. Stone, for that for that comment and for that answer. I'm just looking at the numbers right now, and I mean, it's my understanding that we can only work with the current census numbers. The city is potentially drawing with those potential housing units being filled. Which could affect the population in each division, but will we be able to anticipate all the other federal, all the other state requirements regarding which particular population lives there? Will we be in compliance regarding that? I guess that's to Mr. Johnson's question.
Yeah. So. It's a little bit of a vague arena. The court's preference is definitely that it be very concrete growth. And as Mr. Stone was just talking about, you have to do a jurisdiction-wide analysis. It certainly can't be, we know one development's going in, so we're going to underpopulate. It's got to be, look at the whole district and what are fairly concrete analyses. And fairly short-term. You know, a lot can happen in 10 years. We have no idea if something planned for 6 years from now is actually going to happen. So they don't like that to be taken into account. They really want it to be kind of approved projects, preferably, you know, with ground being cleared kind of status. But there's no hard and fast rule. And one of the interesting things we're coming across as we work with jurisdictions right now is a shock at the numbers in many coastal communities. And it turns out that the Airbnb factor is very real. A lot of jurisdictions that have a coastal council district, they're short because so many people sold their houses to turn them into Airbnb things. So you never really know what's going to happen over 10 years. You know, we could have another 2008, anything like that could happen. So the preference, and again, it's not a hard and fast rule. The preference is certainly that it be fairly known growth in the short term, because you don't want to be off balance now just to get to perfect balance in 10 years. You want to know that it's going to throw you off now. And then the one requirement is it does have to be a jurisdiction-wide analysis, as Mr. Stone was just mentioning.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And Mr. Cole, can you let us know how much the agency is paying Mr. Johnson to facilitate this process? Do we have that number?
Can you repeat the question, Director Orzechowski?
How much are we paying Mr. Johnson to conduct this analysis?
I can get the contractual amount. The way that the proposal was laid out, it was kind of a menu-based mm-hmm. approach. So he had the foresight, I think, to lay out an approach that had kind of different milestones that you could engage with. So really, it depends on the process that we select, what the overall cost will be, number of meetings, whether we decide to go through and do the maps or not. I believe the all-in cost, Doug, and you'd have to remind me or not, but it still was under $30,000.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually just was able to dig up some numbers, and yeah, there's a base like demographic work and mapping work piece. If we do go forward with drawing lines, and a full process as was laid out of considering different options, the base is $19,500. And then as Mr. Cole was just mentioning, there's a per meeting fee for each meeting on top of that. If the board does decide not to draw lines and just stick with the current map, that base drops from being $19,500 down to down to $6,500 plus the per meeting charges. So yeah, we're under $30,000 either way.
Okay, understood. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Orzechowski. Director Planbach, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, for instance, Mission Village was approved for 4,000 units, but they have only sold, I think it's 785 actual lots to merchant builders. And it takes time for the market to absorb the housing. No matter how much is built and available, there has to be people to buy it. And so if you're going to do projections, you might want to, you know, go on what merchant builders have actually started building. And the other suggestion I would have is look at market absorption, because you can look at number of new units sold over a period of time and get some idea about how much might come online. And I do want to reiterate whoever said, I think it was Mr. Cole, that everybody has these hopes. And then, I mean, look at Newhall Ranch. They were going to break ground in 2000 and they broke ground in 2021 or something like that. So it can really not work out the way they thought it would. That's all I had to say about that. But I mean, the ones that are already being built by merchant builders, those are probably going to be sold. So that's where I was thinking a little bit about how it's going to be kind of uneven. It won't be that massively uneven, but if we know that this is going to happen, we might want to do a little straightening out.
Thank you, Director Planback. Director Colley.
Yeah, thank you. So just to be clear, my interest in having a committee look at this doesn't require an ad hoc committee. In other words, it certainly does not require that we do so in an unnoticed meeting. I would be fully in support of having our committees work in public. So I'm looking at the practicality. We've decided for most things that trying to draft a memo with a committee of 12 is difficult. That's my interest. I'm not necessarily against the idea of trying to do this by a whole board, but I just think it's going to become difficult and cumbersome if we decide that we do want to redraw the map. And I want to offer some support for the idea of looking at least redrawing the map. If you look at the current map, it has, there's not a single named community, at least, whether it be Canyon Country, Valencia, Newhall, Castaic. I back off because Stevenson's Ranch is the only one that's fully contained within a single division. None of the other communities, I'm going to back off that too. Castaic, I guess, is. But certainly in the city, all of the communities that are typically called out by the residents of this city are all divided up. And communities of interest are formed oftentimes by other things, school districts, and our current map has nothing even remotely resembling boundaries that are close to any of the elementary school districts. None of them are close to the different high school districts. High school attendance areas, I mean to say. I can't think of, there was no nothing that I could tell when we formed this current map that anybody made any effort to try to keep together any sort of a community of interest. You know, perhaps there was, but I was unaware of it, and I still can't figure it out from the maps. And so I'd be interested in trying to see if it's possible to draw maps that are more representative of the way the residents of our valley identify themselves in a community. So I'd like to at least consider that. If it's not feasible for some reason, if it becomes too difficult to do, then yeah, I guess we wouldn't do it. But it seems like we ought to try. And again, I'm not trying to do this behind closed doors. I didn't want to leave anybody the impression that I thought this ought to be a secret process. It's not my point at all. Thanks.
All right. I don't, at least on my screen, I don't see any other hands raised, so I'll go ahead and make my comments. I think Mr. Doug covered something I was going to bring up. I certainly don't want to unbalance our electoral divisions, kind of artificially anticipating future growth. I don't think that's something we should do. I'm opposed to redrawing the boundaries unless we have to. And at this point, we don't have to. We just went through the first election for SCV Water. Pardon me. And I think to redraw boundaries, I think in a pretty radical way, like Director Colley perhaps suggests, I don't think that's something we should do. And I would support leaving the boundaries as is and take it up again at the next census. Director Ford, you had a comment.
Actually, I think my software put my hand up, but I will thank Mr. Johnson and Joe for the work they did. And I would agree that it may be pretty speculative to try and figure out what's going to happen in some of the undeveloped areas around the valley. And that I think there's an incentive there to stick with the current boundaries as well. Thank you.
Are there any other questions, comments, or discussion board members want to engage in at this point? So I will then ask for the preference of the board. Are you inclined to option one, or are you inclined to option two? We can at least discuss that. Excuse me.
Option one being no change to the lines, option two being taking up a modification.
That's correct.
I'm inclined to go with option one.
Director Cooper.
Option one.
Vice President Gladby.
Option one.
Director Armitage.
I don't know what option this would fall under, maybe option 1.5. I'd still like to hear from staff their thoughts on future projected growth. I mean, I think there's some numbers that some people feel comfortable considering that would become part of our service area. I mean, we spend a lot of money and we have a lot of discussions on building infrastructure to certain areas that are coming online soon. And so I feel like there could be some level of confidence of additional housing units that can possibly be folded into it. And I'm not saying, I don't want us to commit to that now, but I think it would be interesting to hear from staff what those numbers could possibly look at before deciding going with option one or two. Thank you.
You're on mute, President Martin.
Sorry. Trying to get this cough out of my throat. I have no problem with the board doing some more work to better inform the board, but that's the extent of it. Director Bronstein.
I, too, would like to get more information from staff before I make my final decision. I think that some of the points that people have brought up here have merit, and I'm curious.
Very good. Director Ozahowski.
Yeah, I'm inclined to go with option one.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Martin?
Yes, Joe, go ahead.
Hey, this is Joe. I would just be clear, we're not making any decisions tonight. We're required to have two public hearings. So we can give, it sounds like there's some interest in potentially keeping the lines the same. Also some additional work and research that can be done by Doug to address comments originally raised by Director Planback and echoed by a few. And I think also to give a little bit of thought to what Director Colley's thoughts were as well. You know, maybe not necessarily drawing a map that way. The thought is that you have the public hearing. It's the opportunity for the public to provide their insight and their opportunities for the board to consider, as well as the board. And then board at the next meeting can provide more specific direction for what would occur then at the public meeting in which we need to adopt. We had on calendar to have the option for three. We originally thought that maybe there were three meetings. If we were drawing original lines, it might be that we just need to have the legally required two. But we have to have the two. So we one to get input, and the second potentially to come back with something where we've received direction for adoption.
Very good, Joe. Thank you very much. Let's take a few more director questions. Vice President Gladbach.
Yes. You know, if staff and Doug are going to be looking at future projections, I think the whole focus is west. But I also want them to include future projections of increased growth in divisions two and three. I mean, one and two. So, which is real possible. There's going to be growth there too.
Director Ford, sorry.
That's okay. I think Joe laid out an approach that works very well. I'm willing to listen to if staff tends to take a look at what they think some of the future growth areas will be. But if we were to redraw the boundaries of districts on the notion of future development, the timing of that development is completely unknown at this point. And yes, the urban water management plan did look at full build out of the valley, but it made that assumption that it would be 2050 when it occurred. So we would be taking a bit of a risk as to what development would actually occur in the 10-year window. Thank you.
If I might speak to that point too, I think Director Planbeck hit on that as well in her comments. I did take that under advisement that, you know, even looking out 10 years is probably too far. And Doug's comments as well, that the courts frown on being too expansive and they do want an overall agency-wide look, not focusing on one division. So I did take all of those comments in. I think what we could do is just try to look at what we know is in the actual development pipeline in terms of things that have started the processing with our engineering group. That might give us a look out, you know, a year, 2 years. We'd at least know whether that, you know, is worth making a small adjustment for. The other thought that occurred to me as the discussion was going on, and it's something maybe the board members also want to consider, is if we slice off a piece of an existing division, those voters suddenly have representation that they didn't vote for previously. So that is something to consider as well. And I didn't mean to shortchange that issue.
Director Planbeck.
Well, of course, anytime you redistrict, you're going to have people represented by people that didn't represent them before. But my idea wasn't to do some huge slice. My idea was just to balance the 500 and the, I think it was like 400 extra or something already, and think that maybe we're going to have another 500 in the 10 years. So I was thinking maybe put 1,000 other people into District 2. And District 2, there's some streets that could just be enlarged a little bit to include more, less of District 3 and more of District 2. That was my only suggestion. But I also wanted to ask, if things get really crazy, which I really don't think they will, but is there a way to redistrict before 10 years, or do we have to wait for 10 years under any circumstances?
I can answer that, and Doug, feel free to jump in. But there is a provision in the elections code that does allow by 2/3 majority of the board, and it appears to be based on significant increase in population in one of the divisions or more than one to create an imbalance. But I don't have to, maybe Doug has specific experience with that having happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm okay if we end up with not doing it, but it just seems like it, when you already are out of balance by around 1,000, maybe it might be a opportunity to fix that now.
Yeah, I would just add that, yes, special districts do still have that power, as Mr. Byrne just mentioned, to do it. You may hear a new state law passed that governs how cities and counties redistrict, and it does ban them from doing a mid-decade unless they do a major annexation, like increase their size by 25%. But that law only applies to cities and counties. So special mm-hmm. districts still do have that authority. And a couple have. I should emphasize, though, the thought of growth, you know, we're dealing with, like, I'm actually talking to you from Buckeye, Arizona. You know, one of the council districts in Buckeye is 66% overpopulated, while another one has only half the population of a district. So that's the kind of imbalances, you know, that's an extreme, but, you know, a half of a percent, again, these are rounding errors. 1,000 people in a 120,000 person thing, that's a rounding error. What we're really, what the courts are really anticipating is, you know, 5,000, 10,000 imbalance in the next couple of years.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I spent a lot of nights in Buckeye, Arizona many years ago. I was working on the power plant out west of town, so I'm sure Buckeye Road doesn't look like it did then. But any other comments or questions from directors? I'd like to add another comment. Along the lines of what General Manager Stone said, I think we just went through the first election for SDV Water, and I would be very reluctant to start changing boundaries, even if it's in a minor way right now, for the second election for SDV Water. And if we have the ability to adjust down the road, well, in connection with that, I do have a question for Mr. Johnson. How would we get population data if it was prior to the next census?
So there's a couple of options. The extreme is you can actually hire the Census Bureau and they will come and do a special census. It's very, very highly reliable data. It takes generally 6 to 9 months and is very expensive. The other option, you know, for a jurisdiction your size, you're probably talking about, I don't know, $500,000 to $1 million for that. The other option is that the Census Bureau runs something called the American Community Survey. It's actually where we get all our data on citizen voting age population and renter occupied housing, all those kinds of non-total population fields. And that is updated every year down to the block group level. So you can actually use that data. It's not as precise as doing a special census, but you can use that data. It lags a couple of years behind. So you'd probably want to look at, you know, doing a redistricting in 2026 or 2027, because then the numbers would be about mid-decade. So you do have that available, and that data is available, and you would just have to pay someone like NDC to do it. You wouldn't have to bring in the Census Bureau for that.
That sounds good. You know, my priority coming into this, and I was pleasantly surprised by the data you gave us, Mr. Johnson. I wanted to make sure all of the current directors stayed in the divisions, their original electoral divisions. And I wanted to make as small a change as we have to. And since we don't have to, I will await the update and information from staff in our January meeting. But I'm pretty sure my position will be that we hold the existing boundaries as is, unless we see some rather surprising information come from staff. So with that, is there any other comment from the board before we go to what amounts to item 6? We didn't hear from Director Kelly. RJ, do you have any input or question or comment on this? Just curious.
I think we're heading in the right direction as far as getting some additional information. I don't know that any additional houses added is going to increase the percentage anywhere near 10%. But I do think we have to do our due diligence.
Very good. Thank you, Director Kelly. Director Armitage, you have the
Thank you. I just want to say thank you for what I think was a good discussion that we had, and I appreciate you being open to hearing more data from staff. So thank you for that.
President Martin, you're muted.
Trying. Okay, yeah, very good. Yeah, I'll add my words of thanks to Mr. Johnson. I guess that should be Dr. Johnson, but in any event, we know who Doug is. So thank you, Doug, for your work and your team's work. Thank you for Steve and your help on this first meeting. This is a very important meeting, very informative meeting. And I think we'll all have some things to think about before the January meeting. And I hope, Director Bronstein, you're feeling better soon. So with that, I would enter. We don't need a motion for item 6 adjournment. And so unless there's further discussion, We are hereby adjourned. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Night, thank you.
Good night.